horse is greener than MacReady when I meet her in the morning. The morning, where the morning.
The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Joe Simpson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Triangle Yesteryear. On this program, you'll hear reminiscences of life in earlier times around North Carolina's Triangle area, written by local authors. On today's program, we'll continue reading chapters from Boyhood Years on an Alamance Farm, written by Watt M. Cooper of Graham, North Carolina. Boyhood Image of Papa. When Mama graduated from the Graham Normal College at the age of 18, she went down to Chatham County to teach. There she met and married Williamson Lee Cooper, better known to his friends and neighbors as Willie. As Mama described him to me, he was the best-looking young man in the whole community. Everyone liked and respected him. He had a beautiful horse and buggy and kept them spotlessly clean. I enjoyed being with him. They were married within a year, and the next year, Henry was born. That year was 1885. Those were rough days in the South. Lee's surrender at Appomattox was only 20 years past, and the people of North Carolina were still suffering from many problems brought on by the war. Grandpa Albright was without adequate help on his farm. His slaves had long since been freed, and there was little hired help available. He told Mama and Papa that if they would come up to Alamance and manage the farm, that he would give them Mama's share of her inheritance at once, including about 300 acres of land. They accepted the offer and built their house in the grove adjacent to where Sam is living today. Papa experimented with many kinds of farm activities in those early days. He planted fruit trees at every opportunity. He raised many kinds of chickens. He even tried his hand at making brick. He was very active and even restless, and it looked as though he was anxious to have everything moving at once. I did not know him during these years when he worked full-time on the farm. I only know what the older ones in the family told me. By the time I came along, Papa had quit farming and had gone to work as a salesman, first with a fruit tree company, and then as a representative of a stock lick company, to which I owe my name. The owner was Watt Martin, a very likable and honorable man, some of whose family I later came to know and admire. I can't say that I liked my name when I was a small boy. Other boys were called Bill, John, Jim, or many other common and familiar names, but who ever heard of a real boy having a given name such as Watt? It just seemed to me that they had run out of names and had called me the first thing that had come to mind. At any rate, being the last one of 11, I had to take what I could get, including my name. Papa used to tell some interesting stories about his days as a fruit tree and stock lick salesman. He traveled at times with another salesman named Atwater. Very often they would be so far out in the country that they were unable to find lodging and would have to spend the night in any place where they could find sufficient hospitality. One day in Maryland it looked as though everyone had run out of hospitality. No one would take them in. Night was coming on, and they had no place to sleep. "I'll tell you what let's do," said Atwater. "Let's tell them that we're a couple of clergymen on an evangelistic mission. Maybe they'll let us have a room." Papa agreed, and sure enough, it worked. They were taken in and given the best bed in the house. They got a wonderful night's rest. Next morning at breakfast, they saw a Bible on the table. "We have our family devotions before we go to work," said their host. "We will be honored if you two preachers would lead us in our worship." Well, Papa was a little quicker than Mr. Atwater, so he reached out and grabbed the Bible and began reading. It left Mr. Atwater with the prayer. "Will you please lead us in prayer?" said the man as he turned to the clergyman on his left. He began well enough. He thanked the Lord for the rest they'd had that night and for the food that had been provided. He asked the Lord's blessing upon the good people who had taken them in. He was getting along very well, until he realized he didn't know how to end his prayer. He went back over some of the things that he had already said. He stumbled and mumbled, but he couldn't think of the right way to close. Finally, in desperation, he almost shouted out, "Very truly yours, J. Van Linley Company." They got out of the house as quickly as possible. Papa was a child of the times in which he lived. In those days, the man of the house was the real family head. Papa was the head of the Cooper family. When he spoke, things moved. He wasn't at home very much, but when he was there, he knew that we had to work. He believed in work, especially for his growing boys. One Monday morning, he told Jim and me that he wanted a pile of lumber moved from one side of the yard to the other. It took us all week. When he left to go out again the following week, he said to us, "I want you to move that pile of lumber to the other side of the yard." It was exactly the same place from which it had come. Papa didn't call it discipline, but later we came to realize that the work he taught us to do was good for us. Jim and I are agreed, however, that a little psychology might have paid off if Papa had had time for it. For instance, if we could have been given our own acreage, a calf or two, and perhaps a partnership in the goat herd or hog pen, we might have taken a little more interest. But with 11 children, Papa did not have time to give special attention to one or two. Everything on the farm went into the common treasury, and what money there was belonged to the family as a whole. I guess we were quite lucky to have enough to eat. We never raised cotton or tobacco on the Cooper farm. I don't know why these two crops were omitted on our place when they were clearly the two main cash crops of the agricultural South. It may be that Papa had seen so many poor people slaving in the cotton and tobacco fields that he just decided it was no way to get rich. Anyway, it was more interesting to grow other things. We sold cut feed, small grain, baled hay, all kinds of dairy products, vegetables, strawberries, watermelons, cantaloupes, eggs, chickens, and just about every kind of fruit that people would buy. It was great fun to get on the wagon and go into town with a load of edibles from the Cooper farm. Most of the time we were treated with courtesy and high regard, but once in a while we saw another side of community life that bordered on snobbishness. Margaret long remembered the time when she took some strawberries to Swepsonville. She went from house to house, knocking at the door. When she came to the Baker home, she was told, "Go around to the back if you have anything to sell." Margaret didn't go around to the back, either then or ever. We may have been poor, but we were very proud. Papa would take off now and then to go hunting. He was deadly in his aim, and with his trusty shotgun and his smart bird dog named Vic, he would always come home with plenty of rabbits or quail. He liked possum, too. No one could cook possum like Mama and Papa. He put too much red pepper on it at times. I always thought that the red pepper was put there to keep us younger ones from eating so much. But I soon learned that if you scraped the pepper off the meat, you could get into where the flavor was wonderful. If there was one character qualification that lifted Papa above most people of his time and generation, I think that it would be the trait of honesty. His word was his bond. He was dependable. He paid every bill that he ever owed, and he paid it as promptly as possible. He instilled the principle of integrity into the daily life of his children, and when and if they failed to live up to this standard, it hurt him deeply. His greatest job opportunity and financial gain came as the result of the broken word of the owner and manager of the company for which he worked. He had been promised a bonus by the Burlington Coffin Company if he would sell a certain amount of goods by a certain time. He exceeded his goal by a large amount. When he asked about the promised bonus, the manager just laughed at him. Papa resigned immediately. He took the offer of another job by a competing company and took all of his customers with him. For the next several years, until the time of his death, he led the company in sales. Burlington Coffin Company tried to get him to take back his old job, but Papa refused. He couldn't tolerate dishonesty. It was a great day in Papa's life when he became a grandfather. Dorothy Susan, Henry's first child, was born in 1913. She often visited with us and became very much attached to Papa. It was about the time when she was learning to talk that Papa began to wear a toupee. She had seen him with his bald head, and she had seen how different the toupee made him appear. One morning, as he was coming out of his bedroom, he had on his hat. She stopped him. "Granddaddy," she said, "take off your hat." Papa took off his hat. "Now, Granddaddy," she said, "take off your hair." It wasn't long before Lee, John, Annie, and Margaret were married, and Papa had more grandchildren than he could manage. He was always glad to see them come, but more often than not, it was more of a relief to see them go. Just one more incident in Papa's life, and mine, that sums up his fine character and deep sense of values. I had finished my undergraduate work at the University of North Carolina and was headed for Yale Divinity School. I had been awarded a scholarship, but it was not sufficient to see me through my first year there. I needed $250. Papa said, "I've seen you through college. That's as far as I can go. If you want to go further, you'll have to go on your own. I'll go with you to the bank, and we'll see if they'll let you have the money." Well, they wouldn't. Charlie Scott was cashier. He said to me, "If you want the money to go to our own seminary at Richmond, I'll let you have it. But I'm not going to grant you a loan to go off to Yale and study for the Presbyterian ministry." So, that was that. When we left the bank, Papa said to me, "What? Why do you want to go to Yale?" I replied, "Papa, Yale is a great university. The Divinity School is part of it. I do not think that religion has anything to fear from an honest search for truth. If my religion has to be sheltered and protected from the best scholarship that this country affords, it wouldn't be worth having. I believe that my faith will stand the test." Papa came back with these words that endeared him to me for the rest of his life. "Watt, if you feel that way, I'll borrow the money for you, and you can give me your note. I think that you're right, and I'm backing you up." The money was paid back to Papa's estate during the first years of my ministry, and I still feel that it was about the best loan that was ever made to me. Papa died during my senior year in the Divinity School. I had come home at Christmas time and had preached in the Graham Presbyterian Church. Papa was there. He was very proud. I am very proud to say that he was my papa.
The blue-tailed fly, Jimmy Crackcorn, I don't care, Jimmy Crackcorn, and I don't care, Jimmy Crackcorn, and I don't care, my master's gone away.
Mama, queen of the Cooper home. One of the earliest memories that I have is a visit that I made with Mama to see Mrs. Griffin, who lived about half a mile down the road. Mama had been working hard all morning, and the four little ones had been very annoying. Mama just had to have some relief. She turned to Annie, who was one of the bigger girls, and said, "I think I'll run away." Annie says that I ran up to her and grabbed her leg and said in reply, "I'm going to run with you." She let me go with her, and Mama and Mrs. Griffin had a nice visit, the high point of which was the passing around of cucumber pickles. It was quite a treat, and it made a lasting impression upon me. After a while, Mama must have decided that since she couldn't get rid of me by running away, that she would give me another chance. So we went home. It was quite a day for Mama's baby. Mama was a firm believer in education. She wanted her children to have all the education that they could get. She herself had been taught by Dr. William Long in what was then called Graham Normal College. It was the forerunner of Elon. It was there that she learned the fundamentals and learned them well. Her handwriting was beautiful and often admired by her children. She was well-grounded in the classics and was so well-trained in Latin that she was able to have a class for some of her older children one year when they had to be out of school for a time. She never ceased to be interested in good reading, and her knowledge of history and science was far above average. Her knowledge of science came largely from medical books, which Uncle Jim, her doctor brother, had left with her. When an emergency arose in the family, Mama always seemed to know just what to do. Children's diseases such as measles, mumps, whooping cough, and chicken pox were her specialties. Margaret fell into the fire and was badly burned. Mama treated her with such promptness and efficiency that there was never a scar. She helped nurse Jim through typhoid fever. She spent much time with Mary, who had been crippled from meningitis. All of us were treated with sulfur and molasses, Boykin's worm killer, and various medicines, many of which were home remedies made from herbs and roots. Once, when Dorothy Susan stood on the bee gums and was stung by swarms of honeybees, Mama probably saved her life by treating her in time. I never knew her to panic in the face of an emergency. Mama had great sympathy for the teachers of her children. She rarely criticized or complained about what they were doing. Only once did I ever know her to be upset. Jim and I were together in the third grade under a teacher named Beulah Coble. Beulah and Annie were going with the same boy at the same time, and Annie was ahead. Beulah decided to take it out upon Jim and me. She would switch us just about every day for some little something that we did. We got so that we would yell to the top of our voices when she would start switching. That made her angry, and she would hit us even harder. One day we came home, and there were red stripes all over our bare legs. Mama asked us about them, and we told her what had happened. She got on the telephone and called Beulah Coble and gave her a verbal switching that must have been worse than the ones that we had received. From that day on, Jim and I received better treatment. I suppose that it's impossible to raise a family as large as ours without developing a sense of humor. Mama certainly had a sense of humor. She loved a good clean joke, and she laughed at the tall tale stories that Henry and others would tell from time to time. She entered into our games and enjoyed singing the songs that she had learned as a little girl. The words of one of these songs came back to me now. Froggy went a-courtin' and he did right, uh-huh, uh-huh. Froggy went a-courtin' and he did right, uh-huh, uh-huh. Froggy went a-courtin' and he did right, sword and pistol by his side, uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh. He rode up to Miss Mouse's house, uh-huh, uh-huh. He rode up to Miss Mouse's house, uh-huh, uh-huh. He rode up to Miss Mouse's house, saying, Miss Mouse, will you marry me, uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh. Well, this song had a lot of verses and could go on forever, but we children were always fascinated and were never too tired to listen to Mama as she sang it. In all of our games, we had to play fair. Whether it was rook, flinch, checkers, or some other game, we had to go by the rules. Sometimes Jim and I went a little too far in some of the pranks that we played upon the city boys who came out to visit with us. A few years ago, shortly before he died, Bruce Holt reminded me of the time that he came out to spend the night. He wanted to go snipe hunting, since he had heard so much about that particular sport from previous conversations with us. Jim and I very reluctantly agreed to take him if he would do just what we told him to do. So we took him down to the most isolated spot we could find, gave him a sack, and told him to stand there and be very still while we ran the snipes to him. He eagerly promised to do just what we had told him to do, so Jim and I went on back to the house and went to bed. Bruce stayed down there for more than an hour. Mama finally called him in. As he said to me, "If Aunt Geneva hadn't called me in, I guess I'd be down there yet." If there was one key to Mama's character and personality, it was her deep and abiding religious faith. She believed in the fundamentals of the Christian religion, but she was never what one might call a rabid fundamentalist. She recognized that people view religion from many different angles, and she was never intolerant of people who differed from her. She was no sentimentalist. There was no sob stuff about her religion. Religion was something to be lived every day, and it was something that should show up in everything that you did. She did not talk about her religion very much. She was too busy cooking, cleaning, and caring for the needs of her family to read as much as she would have liked, even from the Bible. With the hired help to oversee in Papa's absence, she couldn't take the time to be the Bible scholar that she might have been. Sometimes, on Sunday afternoon at church time, she was too tired to go, but she saw that we went, and that we were properly bathed and dressed. We knew that she was there in spirit, even though she could not be there in the flesh. I guess that we Coopers got what religion we have through what might be called religious osmosis. That is, it just seeped out upon us as Mama went about her work of caring for her family. But each of us, looking back, must confess that she was the greatest religious influence in our lives. I, for one, look upon my memories of her as my fondest treasure from childhood. She was, indeed, one of the greatest women that I've ever known.
Old dusty road, I'm a-blowin' down this old dusty road, Lord, Lord, and I ain't gonna be treated this way. I'm a-goin' where the water tastes like wine.
Larry learns about his Uncle Sam. When my son Larry came back from Vietnam, he stayed at home for several weeks before his school term began. It was during this time that he came to know his Uncle Sam. He fished in his pond and helped with his work, and as a result, there grew up a friendship that has lasted several years. It was out of this friendship that there came the desire to know something of his background. So I sat down one day and attempted to draw a pen portrait of Sam as I remembered him from my boyhood. I think that it may help to understand how Sam got that way, and why Larry was so attracted to him. If Sam had not chosen agriculture as a life vocation, I'm sure that his next choice would have been history. He's always been interested in that field. Miss Thomas, the school librarian at the Graham City School, once told me that Sam was the only student in that school who took out and read the book The Rise of the Dutch Republic. Even today, if you ask him about some event in the Revolutionary War or the War Between the States, you may just set him off on a long discourse to which you may or may not be prepared to listen. My childhood memories of Sam go back to our school days. He was almost 8 years older than I, but I remember him driving the covered wagon, and later the buggy, in which we rode 3 miles to school. On special occasions, he would ride the mule, Beck, and hook her to the tree reserved for the Cooper horses. The kids at school called Sam's mule Dynamite, and at his graduation, on class night, the class poet read these lines: Samuel Cooper is always smiling, and his face is ever bright, but he is never quite so happy as when riding Dynamite. Upon finishing high school, he did not go immediately to college. Papa kept him out 1 year to help with the farm work. Money was scarce, and several of the older ones were in college, so Sam had to wait his turn. It was during this year that he learned many things about life on the farm. For one thing, he learned that trapping for wild game was a fascinating experience, if not financially remunerative. He caught muskrats, possums, rabbits, squirrels, and at least one mink, of which he was very proud. Papa kept talking about a muskrat coat that he was going to have made, but nothing ever came of it. It was a good year for Sam. He was much more mature when he eventually entered A&M College in Raleigh, which is now NC State. I remember one of the first letters that he wrote to Mama. He wrote, "This is a wonderful place. I hope that Jim and Watt will come here when they are ready to go to college." It was during these years that Sam became a sort of hero to Jim and me. In the summers during school vacation, Papa would put him in charge of the many jobs that had to be done, and Jim and I worked under him. We put up fences around the pastures, cut down the big oak tree in the backyard, sold strawberries, watermelons, and cantaloupes, milk, butter, and anything else that the town people would buy. Sam was a good boss. He didn't believe in working all the time, so we spent many an afternoon in the swimming hole and fishing pond. We graded off a tennis court and learned to play the game very well. Work with Sam was a pleasure to us, and we were delighted when he called us partner. We felt that we were growing up. When World War I began, Sam wanted to volunteer and go with many of the other Graham boys. Papa, who came along in the aftermath of the Civil War, had his doubts about the wisdom of our being involved in this one. He said to Sam, "This may be another rich man's war and a poor man's fight. Why don't you wait a while? If they really need you, they'll draft you, and that will be time enough." Sam waited for the draft, which for him came in 1918. He was inducted into the Army and almost immediately caught the flu, from which he almost died. The end of the war came soon after that, and the boys came home. Many of them, including Sam, were really sorry that they hadn't seen more action. In the years when he was studying agriculture at college, Sam would come home and experiment with various types of farm projects. Papa bought a Moline tractor, and with it, and with the help of John Trollinger and the mules, Sam terraced the farm. He taught Papa the value of certain crops, like Lespedeza. The livestock breeds were improved. He introduced fescue to the county. He pruned the orchards. Papa was proud of him. I think that Papa had just about given up on his other boys, so far as farm work was concerned. Henry, Lee, and John were in other vocations. Jim and I did not show much promise as far as any kind of work was concerned. When his temper was a little frayed, Papa would say of Jim and me, "They're not worth the powder and lead it would take to kill 'em." But with Sam, it was different. As long as he had Sam, there was hope. Up to the end of the war, and for a year or two afterward, Papa dreamed of making his farm the showplace of Alamance farm life. Well, things didn't turn out as expected. Mama wanted to move to town to be near her friends. Jim and I were nearing the close of our years at home. There was no one left to look after the farm work. Papa decided that it would be better to do what so many others were doing just then, just move to town and rent the farm on shares. I don't believe, however, that he was ever quite reconciled to the change. As long as he lived, he tried to keep something going on the farm. He was delighted when Sam expressed a desire to buy part of the place, and he sold it to him in the hope that he would come back someday and settle down on it. This, of course, is what Sam did. After teaching in a number of places for a few years, he came back to Alamance County and began a career of teaching that lasted about 40 years. During this time, he also farmed and developed an excellent dairy herd. Hundreds of boys in this area remember him with affection and appreciation. Talking with one of them some time ago, I learned that Sam had once been his teacher. "I'll bet he didn't teach you that much," I said. To which he replied, "You know, there are some teachers that you remember, even though they don't teach you a danged thing. Your brother Sam was such a teacher." Sam had many interesting neighbors on his side of the river. Sam Martin, Lacey Cheek, Emma Dixon, Neely Murphy, and many others, most of whom belonged to our boyhood church, Bethany. He had many stories about the people who lived around him. There is one which he often told, which he especially enjoyed. One of his neighbors was a man named Brewer. He was quite a character. He had plenty of native intelligence, but was just a little odd. One never knew what he was going to say or do next. Sam understood him and appreciated him. I will repeat the substance of the story as Sam told it to me. On a cold, rainy morning in November, Sam was out at his barn milking his cows. It was still a little dark, and Sam did not see at first that someone had come up behind him. He must have stood there several minutes before he spoke. Sam turned and saw him. "Hello, Mr. Brewer," he said. Mr. Brewer spoke of the rain and the mud and the problems of farm life, while Sam began to wonder what he had really come for. Finally, Mr. Brewer said, "Mr. Cooper, do you have a bull?"
"Why, yes, I have a bull. Why?"
"Where is he?"
"I keep him tied to a stob out here at the barn," said Sam. "I guess he's still there."
"Let's go see." They went to the barn lot and found that the stob, chain, and bull were all missing. They tracked them across the wet grass and mud and on out into the road. Every now and then, Mr. Brewer would look down at the tracks and chain markings and would say, half to himself, "That's the one, that's the one." They came finally to Mr. Brewer's yard and saw where the bull had turned in. Washtubs were turned over, and tracks went in all directions. The bull had gone all the way around his house, not just once, but several times. Mr. Brewer turned to Sam and said, "Mr. Cooper, that bull came up to my house in the middle of the night, and he went around it like Grant around Richmond. Mr. Cooper, when I saw what that bull was doing, I went inside and got my shotgun and stepped out on the porch. Mr. Cooper, if that bull had taken one more step and come up on the porch, I would have had to shoot him. You'd better take your bull home." Sam went home, thinking of his bull, or, more likely, of the time when Grant went around Richmond.
In Carolina, no one's pussy sweeter than the pretty when I meet her in the morning.
We've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Yesteryear. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Joe Simpson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Following the broadcast, this episode is readily available as a podcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comment or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138.